Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Peristyle Podcast, brought to you by USCFootball.com. This is episode number 24 of the podcast. If you have any questions for us, you can always drop us an email, podcast@USCFootball.com, or go on USCFootball.com and post in the message board. We get questions every week and try to answer them. In our first segment, it's our special guest, as always, Coach Harvey Hyde. How are you doing today, Coach?
Well, Ryan, I'm doing great, buddy. I appreciate you checking in with me, and I'm looking forward to discussing USC Trojan football.
Yeah, we got a great show for you today. Coach Harvey Hyde in the first segment. In the second segment, we're going to talk to USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Wyke. And then in the final segment, we're going to preview the Arizona Wildcats. And we talked to the publisher of the Arizona Rivals site. So we'll get some information on the U of A. But first, just wanted to thank our sponsor for the first segment of the podcast. As always, it's Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com, 1-800-888-7287 is their number, and sctickets.com is the website. Of course, football season is coming up, so if you need tickets for any of those games, all of the Trojan games are now sold out, all the home games. If you need tickets for USC home games, of course, the place you want to go is to Southern California Tickets, Coach.
You're exactly right. That's where I go.
Yeah, so if you need tickets, just go there. And Coach, it was nice enough. I got to see you in person last week instead of us talking over the phone. We were down there at Pac-10 Media Day, and then I went on to your radio show over at the Burger Continental in Pasadena, lovely Pasadena, California. And we got to see what was going on at Pac-10 Media Day. You know, you've been around these for a long time, a lot longer than I have. I'm not saying you're old or anything, Coach. You've been around there. What was your overall thoughts of Pac-10 Media Day?
Well, you know, I like the social part of it, too, as well as listening to the coaches give their opinion on the teams and so on. You're able to see everybody, and everybody seems to be in a friendly mood, and everybody's looking forward to the coming of the college football season and listening to the coaches and doing socializing and the whole thing. I mean, everybody's friendly. Everybody's friends. And I think the thing that separates the Pac-10 Media Day, as far as for the Southern California schools, I think there's more media there that wants to hear, of course, Pete Carroll talk, and again highlight him as the last co-speaker of the day, and Rick Neuheisel. I think a lot of the other schools maybe have three or four beat writers, or not as many people following them in the Los Angeles as the Los Angeles media follows USC and UCLA. So I think it's great, especially if you're a Trojan fan, because all the other coaches walk down the side when they enter to speak at Media Day, but Pete Carroll and Cushing, they go right down the middle, and as you said it on my show, Coach Carroll is kissing babies, and Cushing's learning how to kiss babies, and they wave to everybody and get up there on the stage, and everybody else goes 15 minutes, but Pete Carroll and Cushing, they go 20, 25 minutes, and that's because there's more questions and a lot of interest in USC Trojan football.
Yeah, I agree with you, Coach. It was funny to see, if for those who don't know how it's set up, it was kind of split up in half, and there was a center walkway, but there's all kinds of cameras. You know, we had our video camera there set up there, so a lot of people don't walk through the middle. They kind of come up the side, and the coaches almost kind of sneak in, you know, up that left side, and they kind of go over to the podium. It was funny, just like you said, Pete Carroll, he didn't want to have any of that. He went right down the middle of the aisle, shaking hands along the way, saying hi to the media, along with Brian Cushing, who he brought, who is the USC senior linebacker. And, you know, they get up to the podium. You know, it was really, you could tell that if he wanted to be a politician, Coach, I think he could do a pretty good job of that, too.
I think he could. And, you know, I don't really think he planned that, Ryan. I want you to know the truth. I don't think he really planned that. I just think that's just the way he does things. I think he just said, you know, it's better to walk right down the middle here where we can get there quicker. I don't have to ask anybody to get out of the way. And, of course, Brian just follows him. And it was just a real entrance. It was like the grand finale. You've been here now listening to all of the opening act. Now it's time to hear, you know, now it's here to listen to the real act. And it was impressive and it was fun. And I think he was in a real great mood, and everybody was looking forward to, you know, hearing what he had to say about this coming year. And obviously he says the same thing every year, that this season is a season I've been looking forward to probably as much as any season I've ever looked forward to. I can't wait to get started.
Yeah, he seemed pretty excited. I think he was genuinely excited. But, yeah, you do hear that same sort of speech from him kind of every year. But I think it's exciting just because of this class of 2005, these seniors. It was a very defensive-laden class, and we kind of talked about this on previous podcasts, and I did a story on it, you know, last week, or I think it was maybe, yeah, probably a week or so ago, about this class of 2005. 12 defensive players they signed out of the 19 guys, and 8 of them are listed on the first team right now. So there's some really good class, and I think he likes these seniors that have kind of come a long way. And, you know, there was people like Keith Rivers or Lawrence Jackson, Cedric Ellis, that kind of like people look to for leadership. I think Carroll really is genuinely excited to see some of the guys like Feely Mawala and Brian Cushing and Ray Maluga step up and be those leaders for the defense this year.
No, I think they will be too, because this is their year. They could have come out last year, those two players, and they didn't. They elected to come back as the other players like Rivers did and so on the year before. And I think it's going to be great for the USC spirit, the USC team, and the challenge that USC has this year. Because I really think the Pac-10 is an underrated conference this year. A lot of people are saying that Pac-10 is down, but when you look at the numbers, there's an average of 14 starters per team, 14 starters per team coming back into Pac-10, and 7 starting quarterbacks. Of the 10 teams in the Pac-10, 7 starting quarterbacks returning. So, you know, that's all plus. So I think it's going to be an exciting season, a very challenging season. And, you know, we saw what the media thought as far as who they picked as far as the number 1 through 10. And now you got to play it out, because some coaches really look at that and players look at that. And some players and coaches don't look at that. I always think one school is underrated. I think always Oregon State University is underrated by the media, and they always end up having a great year. And I think this year UCLA was overrated by the media, because I thought the media this year was not really looking at the players, but maybe looking more at UCLA's coaching staff and rating their coaching staff more than they were the players. And remember, coaches can't be great coaches unless they have great players. But again, 38 out of 39 of the voting party voted USC number 1, and someone voted for Cal number 1. So, you know, Cal's going to be an outstanding team. I have Cal number 2 in my poll.
Yeah, so that's a little closer to, you know, what you were saying, to that person that picked Cal number 1. Not sure who that was. I actually tried to get in contact with Scott Wolf to see if he did that, but I didn't hear back. So we'll see. We'll try to find out who that was. You know, in UCLA, I think you're right about being overrated. They do have a really great staff that they put together. You know, Dwayne Walker and Coach Chow, and, of course, Rick Neuheisel. There was some talk on the message boards this week, Coach. I mean, I think the media picked Cal number 5, and some people don't think they're going to finish that high, including you and myself also. But, you know, Coach Chow's first year, even he had Carson Palmer at USC when he was at USC. And, they went to 6-6. It was a 6-6 season. The offense wasn't all that great. Obviously, it started clicking towards the end of the year. Do you think it's going to take Coach Chow a little bit of time to get things going there, you know, given the fact that, you know, the quarterback situation had so many injuries there already?
Oh, yeah, I think it will be, because they're all learning a new system, plus the quarterbacks that got most of the turns in the spring, who he was relying on, they both got hurt, didn't have the opportunity of playing in the spring game. Now, Olsen has a chance of coming back. They said he's starting to work out, but, you know, if you can't go full speed, who knows how long he could go during the season, and maybe he'll re-injure his foot again. He had a broken bone in his foot. But you know, it's a very complicated offense, and it's not just the quarterbacking and the offensive part of the UCLA program that people are concerned with, people like myself, when you evaluate teams. But whenever you start moving as many players around as what they're doing, tight ends at tackles and centers to guards and defensive linemen to offensive linemen. And when you start to move around these players, obviously they feel as a coaching staff they don't have the depth, number one, and they don't have the quality of players to have a backup good player on one side of the ball or a backup good tight end. You got to move them down inside to play tackle. And, you know, when you play tight end all your life and all of a sudden you're going to be a starting tackle, it's a whole different story. You can look the part. You can be the look the part, but playing that part is a whole different feeling. So, and the first three games UCLA have this year, you know, they open with Tennessee on September the 1st. That's going to be a heck of a game in the Rose Bowl. Then they go to BYU. BYU last year finished 14th in the country, 11-2, and they've been picked this year to win the Mountain West Conference, hope to go to a BCS Bowl. Then they've got Fresno State, who I call the giant killer, coming to Southern California to play UCLA in the Rose Bowl. So, you know, their first three games are very, very difficult games, not to just talk about the Pac-10. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch UCLA, not that SC has a breeze as a schedule, but I think they have more returning players. They got depth, and they've got people who know the offense and the defense. They got a returning staff that's been together. So it's a whole different situation.
Yeah, Neuheisel definitely has his work cut out for him. And if they can finish with 8 wins, I think it's going to be a pretty good season this year, especially with the
Many wins?
If they can get 8, I think it's going to be a really good season for them.
UCLA?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they will.
They got to pray for 6.
Yeah. I mean, if they could get up to 8, I mean, that's a pretty damn good coaching job by the staff. But we're not here to talk about UCLA. But, you know, they're in L.A., and obviously USC fans follow them closely. And I'm sure, as last year when Trojan fans were rooting for Navy and schools like that to beat Notre Dame, if UCLA kind of starts off in a hole, 0-3, 0-4, they'll be rooting for him all the way to keep that perfect record going. But, Coach, just one, you know, we talked about some of the problems last week that you had with Pac-10 Media Day. I don't think they really addressed many of those. They did give us umbrellas, which I thought was an interesting gift in sunny L.A. that we got a Rose Bowl umbrella. And, you know, it was another half-day kind of deal. Not too much interesting was said. I mean, last year there was a few interesting comments. You had Coach Harbaugh talking about USC, and that became kind of blew up all over the country. There wasn't too much except that, you know, Coach Neuheisel said that it won't be if they catch up to USC. He said when, and he made that pretty clear. That was kind of the most controversial thing said all day. So all in all, not really that exciting as far as a whole bunch of quotes being generated.
No, you're right, and a lot of it is because the coaches really aren't given a direction of how much time they should speak. They're given 15 minutes normally at most of the media days, Big Ten, Southeastern Conference, and so on. A coach gets up and talks 15 minutes just on it himself on the program, and then he takes questions from the audience. So a coach doesn't really have a lot of an opportunity to talk about his team, so it's difficult to say anything that might spark a question. But I thought Pete Carroll did a great job of speaking, and the dean now in the Pac-10, Mike Bellotti, I thought did a great job, and he is now the dean of all the coaches in the Pac-10. I thought that Rick Neuheisel is a real improvement to Media Day. He spoke well. Jeff Tedford did a great job of talking and explaining his team by not telling you too much, but telling you that he feels they're going to have a good team. Dennis Erickson, as he says, he's just glad to be anywhere.
Yeah, that was pretty funny, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I thought that he did a good job up there. He brought his outstanding quarterback, Carpenter. And Mike Riley, you know, when you look at Mike Riley and you look at Jeff Tedford, I don't know if you'd recognize him without a baseball cap on. I've said that they look so much different out of their baseball cap or their coaching gear when they're on the stage, and they almost look like brothers when you think about it. Did you notice that?
Yeah, definitely. You those guys, you know, with those caps on, they look like coaches. I think they just look like normal dudes walking around if they weren't, if you didn't see them with their gear on there.
No, they look like history professors, yeah. Okay? Nothing against history professors,
no.
Okay?
If they put a tweed jacket on with little patches in the elbows, it would be That'd be pretty good. But just for people that weren't there, most people weren't there, obviously, at Pac-10 Media Day, our beat writer, Dan Wyke, who we're going to talk to in the next segment, brought this up. He was like, Coach Hyde knows everybody. It was like kind of social hour for you, Coach. And, you've been around, you know, Coach Erickson would come up to you. Hey, Harvey, how's it going? And, you know, so many people and some of the coaches and media people know you. It was funny to see you there. You really are the godfather. You were like the king of media day.
Well, I don't know about that. It's just that I've been around a long time. And when you're in the coaching fraternity, it's funny. You know, you know everybody on the way up, you know everybody on the way down, and everybody's been a part of somebody's staff. Either they have somebody on their staff that worked for you, or you coach against each other in high school, or you recommended a coach to him, or he recommended a GA to you to hire. And I do know a lot of the guys, and I know them personally, and I cheer for them because I know what they go through. I know how difficult it is to coach today. I had a nice talk with Coach Carroll there. We had a lot of fun and a couple of laughs. I talked to Rick Neuheisel a long time. And, you know, I just wish that you, as far as younger reporters and younger people who really respect these individuals, would have more time to meet them on a personal basis and talk to them. But with the media day being in such a rush, I call it a rush, really 2.5 hours of having the availability to talk to these guys, it's difficult to sit down and get to know them. I'm fortunate because I've known them before, or known them, the reporters. When I was coaching, they were calling me for interviews or whatever, and now I'm calling them and seeing them at different social events like Media Day. But, you know, when the coach wasn't in that room and people saw him, he was taken away, almost ushered away into a private room where they radio, or really basically television, was filming segments for them for the coming games that they're on national TV and so on. So I really would like to see guys like you, Ryan, and others have the opportunity of sitting down with Dennis Erickson, having lunch like we did. I walked around a lot of the tables, talked to the Rose Bowl people, Las Vegas Bowl people, Holiday Bowl people that were there. Emerald Bowl was there. Poinsettia Bowl was there. Do you realize there are 7 bowl games that have affiliation with the Pac-10? There could be 7 teams from the Pac-10 going to bowl games if they all qualified and won 6 games.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, I wish they would have better representation there. You brought this up last week, but if you didn't know, you have to go out and look for those guys. They were never like introduced, or no one ever made it public. Hey, here's the representative from blah 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 bowl. You never saw that there.
No, and I really feel those people make the effort, like Gary from the Emerald Bowl, to fly from San Francisco to be there, that he should be recognized because some team from the Pac-10 will play there. The Las Vegas Bowl had 2 representatives there. The Holiday Bowl had 2 representatives there. The Rose Bowl had 3 representatives there that should have been represented. 2 past presidents of the Tournament of Roses were there. You know, maybe some mention should have been thank you to the Rose Bowl for the umbrellas that they brought and gave out to everybody, you know, or something like that, just because there are so many volunteers who are in these organizations who work for these bowl games that millions of dollars are split up from these bowl games to the conferences where these teams survive and athletic departments survive on this $17 or $18 or $20 million that the Rose Bowl splits up with the Pac-10 and the Big Ten. So at least, you know, it would sort of maybe make these people feel good if you had an opportunity to be recognized. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree with you, Coach, and we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens with the whole Pac-10, you know, how it goes going forward. There's definitely some problems there. We'd love to see it addressed because they need to be, you know, as a conference, step it up so they can compete on a national level with, you know, conferences like the SEC, the ACC, stuff like that. But one final question for you, Coach. This is another user question. Again, if you have questions for us, you can email us podcast@uscfootball.com is the email address. This one comes from Rich. It's not an easy one, Coach, but he was talking about the practice intensity at USC. And we talk about this a lot during the season. Carroll's philosophy on practices, if you go there, the tempo's very fast. He likes to do a lot of ones versus ones. So there's a high intensity level at practices because he feels that you should practice that hard and it makes the games a little bit easier. But, you know, sometimes people get, when you're practicing one versus ones, I mean, the downside is sometimes people get hurt. And Rich was apparently talking to one of the family members of a player that was injured last year, unfortunately, at a tailgate or some function. And, you know, the parent didn't seem to be, you know, the relative of the player didn't seem to be all that happy that they did practice so hard and the intensity level was high. Now, you were a coach and you've seen the practices here. What do you think are the overall, you know, how Coach Carroll practices with that high intensity? And do you think it's worthwhile when you do risk injury, obviously, when you play like that?
Yes, I do. And I used to practice that way. I think that you form bad habits when you practice at not the intensity level or the speed level that you play at or you play the game at. I think you learn bad habits and you don't learn to do it at a pace of what you're going to see in the game. So I think it's a very positive thing that he does. And yes, you always do risk the chance of an injury, which, and believe me, a coach hates injuries when you lose a player, but a coach has a responsibility to the team, to the university, to put the best product out there that he can put out there. And there's always risk in doing that. And I think the overall success, it's worth the gamble to take a chance that maybe somebody might get hurt during the process, but the entire team improves. And, of course, if you're a parent and your son has been injured and so on, yes, you're going to be very disappointed and you're going to feel bad about it and so on and say, well, maybe that wouldn't have happened and maybe it wouldn't have happened. But maybe it would have happened, too, because I've had players get hurt going half speed because they're not prepared for a hit or they're not ready to practice. So, you know, sometimes you lose players when you're going to walk through drills and sometimes you lose players when you're going full speed. There isn't any real reason for it. It just happens.
Yeah, I agree with you, Coach. And it's hard. I mean, I like to see that high level of intensity, but injuries unfortunately do happen. I, if I'm not mistaken, I think Coach Neuheisel talked about both of his quarterbacks went down in drills. There was no pads. I don't think there was any helmets. And they both got injured like right next to each other.
Yeah, two plays in a row. Yeah, right. He lost Cowan and then he lost Olsen. Two plays in a row. And he sort of made a comment, I think, to Olsen, like, he thought it was just he got stepped on. So he made a comment to him about, because he's been stepped on before as a quarterback by a 300-pound lineman, and he made a comment at something, I forget what his exact wording was, thought he had just got stepped on and he'd shake it off. But then when he saw him still limping around and all of a sudden the trainers came over to him and he saw it was serious, then it was a whole new picture, a whole new story.
Yeah, and he's like, man, both of my quarterbacks in non-contact drills go down with injuries. So, but anyway, Coach, that's all the time we have for this segment. I just wanted to thank our sponsor over at Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com. And, Coach, of course, I wanted to thank you for sharing your insights with us, as always, every week on the podcast.
Well, buddy, I appreciate the opportunity of being with you and all of our Trojan fans out there, or football fans that listen to you or listen to our broadcast, and also pay attention to uscfootball.com.
Thanks, Coach. And coming up after the break, we're going to talk to uscfootball.com writer Dan Wyke, so stay tuned.
The Peristyle Podcast will be back after this short break. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287, that's 1-800-888-7287, or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concerts, sports, and theater.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network. Oh.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We are back with the Peristyle Podcast. This is our second segment, and in this segment, we're going to be talking to USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Wojcicki about the final days of summer workouts and what happened last week at Pac-10 Media Day. Dan, thanks for spending some time with us.
I'm just thrilled to be promoted to second segment.
Yes, you are promoted, and as being part of the second segment, you are sponsored by the law offices of Bart Ring. Trojan fans, if you have any issues with the law, questions, concerns, you can give Bart Ring a call. He's been helping Trojan fans for the last 20 years. Give him a call at 818-587-9299, or you can go to his website, bartringlaw.com. All right, Dan, so last week.
I was just going to, real quick, Ryan, my reputation precedes me that you have to get a lawyer to sponsor my segment. Is that how it flows down?
Gerard didn't like when I would ask him if he needed any legal help. I knew you needed it, so I didn't ask you. But yeah, you definitely should give Bart a call. I think he'll give you a discount.
I may have a lawsuit against the Pac-10 due to back problems after lugging around 3,000 pages of media guides.
There was a lot of media guides over there at Pac-10 Media Day. For those of you who don't know, Pac-10 Media Day was last Thursday. Media from all over the Pac-10 come down, check out, and hear what the coaches have to say. You get a lot of chances to do interviews. There's a lot of live radio and TV spots that go on from there, and they have a room pretty much full of media guides. So everyone gets a little Pac-10 bag that there's no way you could fit 10 media guides in, but they give it to you anyway. Then you stuff all those.
Essentially a grocery bag.
Yeah, and you put about 300 pounds of media guides in there. There's actually the new NCAA rule. A lot of the media guides used to be really big, and now there's an NCAA rule that can only be a certain size. I don't remember how many pages, but they have got a lot smaller, so that does help.
208 pages on the USC media guide.
Yeah, so I'm sure the limit is somewhere in that range. But they used to be a lot bigger. I have some of my older ones here, and they were, 300-plus pages.
Yeah, just epic. Epic works of literature.
Right. So if anyone has any questions, if you want Dan or myself to answer them in the following podcast, give us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com. That's podcast@uscfootball.com. Or you can come by the uscfootball.com message boards. Post a question there, and we'll be more than happy to answer it. But, Dan, just want to get your thoughts on your first Pac-10 media day.
I enjoyed it. It was good to actually, there's a lot of different personalities when it comes to the coaches in the Pac-10, and you get a little bit of a taste of it. Everybody's kind of on their best behavior for the most part at media day, where they don't want to typically ruffle any feathers or say anything too wild unless you're Jim Harbaugh last year and you're talking about the best team ever. A lot of time, mostly it's pretty standard stuff, but there were some things said that I thought were interesting. Obviously, probably the most inflammatory comment of the day goes to UCLA head coach Rick Neuheisel, who said it's not if we catch USC, it's when we catch USC. I think that probably caught most people's ears more than anything else that was said. I know Pete Carroll didn't seem to care all that much about it.
He didn't.
Yeah, he really didn't care, which is fine. I think it's probably better that he didn't. But it's an interesting situation right now. You got a couple coaches on the hot seat in the conference. Obviously, Tyrone Willingham and Mike Stoops being the two that probably are the biggest need of trips to bowl games this year. And the conference has a new coach at Washington State and Paul Wolf. And it's always interesting to hear what a new guy says. I mean, he's a guy, he played in the Pac-10 at Washington State, but. He's been at he was at Eastern Washington, and it's kind of, that's a big difference going from where he was to Pullman, and to be in the Pac-10 and having to deal with the media. And it was just interesting to hear what all these different guys had to say about where they thought their team was. Jim Harbaugh said he's not a bulletin board guy anymore, or he never thought he was, even though, some of the stuff he said ended up, I'm sure, on some bulletin boards. But it was an interesting experience. A lot of linemen actually represented, more than I would have expected. I believe there were two offensive linemen, maybe three even, of the players that were there talking, representing teams. There's a lot of strong offensive lines in the conference this year. A lot of experienced guys returning, a lot of starters returning, and it's really interesting to see where teams are at this point, heading into fall camp and hearing what these coaches. Kind of where they think their teams are at. Pete Carroll, specifically was as excited about the upcoming season as anybody. I don't have anything to judge this against, but I mean, he said he was as excited as he was his first Pac-10 media day. And I think a lot of that just has to do with kind of the rollover and leadership that's going to occur this year.
Yeah, a couple things there. You talked about Coach Stoops over there at Arizona. We are actually going to preview the USC-Arizona game, just really more preview Arizona coming up in the final segment. So we'll talk to Jason Schurer of GoAZCats.com, so you can stay tuned for that in the next segment. And with Coach Carroll, I think, you know, one of the media people that asked him a question, they kind of brought up the fact that he kind of left a little bit on the table on the last couple of years, where they lost a couple games they certainly shouldn't have and lost the opportunities to go to, you know, yet another BCS championship game. And I think some of that's, you know, set in, and Pete Carroll doesn't like to dwell on negatives like that, but I think he knows with the, you know, kind of a new offense coming in, not that the scheme is different, but you really have a, you know, a whole bunch of different people on the line. You have a different starting quarterback. You know, it's kind of going to be a different look to the offense just because of the leadership, and the big guys up front are going to be different. I think he's excited about that, and also about the excited about the opportunity to play such a big out-of-conference opponent early in the season. And they've been doing that every year, but this is going to be the first time it's like a number two, number three team in the country coming in there. So I think he looks at this opportunity as a way to, you know, get this offense going, get, just, you know, kind of get the ship righted again and get everything clicking. And then also, you know, get a really good opportunity to go back to another BCS championship game.
Yeah, you know, those losses that you mentioned, those games that they kind of left on the table, you know, obviously losing to UCLA in 2006, a really tough loss. And then, you know, obviously last year against Stanford, another just really, you know, some would say almost an excusable loss. And I think it's fair to bring those points up, you know, when you talk about it. You know, I mean, I don't think hardly anybody would argue with the amount of talent that USC's had the past, you know, 4 or 5 years. I mean, it's pretty much unmatched to anybody else. I mean, you look at the NFL draft and, you know, you get 10 players selected. It seemed like every other pick in the first round was a different Trojan. I mean, it was something, it was pretty remarkable. And I mean, you think about all those guys being on the same team together, you know, they always have had that little hiccup the last 2 years. The thing that I think, you know, I think that Coach Carroll's excited about is that with this new group and all these new leaders, I think he's feeling really confident about this team. I think, you know, he looks at a guy like Mark Sanchez who, you know, has been in games and he knows what he can do as a player. But I think, you know, with Mark, it's more the intangibles. It's the leadership qualities he brings to the table. It's the kind of that attitude that you want in your starting quarterback. A guy who's not afraid to grab a face mask, but at the same time, he's not afraid to, you know, put his arm around someone else and pick him up. You know, I think he knows the right way to deal with people. I think, you know, you look at the running back situation and you see six guys there who I think, you know, Coach Carroll feels are all capable of playing. And then you look at wide receiver, you know, a position of weakness last year that, I mean, Ryan, I mean, we've been out at workouts. It very well could be a position of strength on the offense this season, really. I mean, they've looked like a really, really good group. I mean, especially when you add some new guys like Bryce Butler, DJ Shoemate to the mix. I mean, we've been talking about those guys, I feel like, since they've gotten on campus about just how impressive they looked. You know, another guy, Jordan Cameron, is a guy who Tuesday's workout just really shined. And, you know, even had Mark Sanchez speech just said a couple times. But you know, I think it's that. And I also think, you know, one of the things that he said to me that I thought was most interesting was, you know, when they recruited Brian Cushing and Ray Maluga and Kevin Ellison, you know, and Kyle Moore, like the core of this, Feely Moala, the core of the senior class, they recruited them to lead. It wasn't always to be in the backseat. And now they're at the point where there isn't anybody ahead of him. You know, Keith Rivers isn't there to patrol anything anymore at linebacker, you know, and to be the elder statesman. Now it's those other guys. You know, you don't have a guy like Lawrence Jackson and a guy like, you know, Cedric Ellis on the defensive line. You know, now it's Kyle Moore and Feely's turn to be the guys that lead. And I think he's incredibly confident in their abilities to be kind of the flag carriers for this team. And I think that's an exciting thing, really, for USC fans. I mean, when you look at this team, and you see all that senior leadership, and you see all those guys who were handpicked, I guess, to lead this team this year. I guess that's my point, is that you know, it was all part of a plan to get these guys into the position to lead, and they've all accepted it and, you know, and in most cases really embraced it.
Yeah, their time has come. I think Pete Carroll really likes this group. I don't know if anyone got to check out. We did a story on this class of 2005 and the remarkable numbers, and we talked about it last week on the podcast. So go back to uscfootball.com and check it out. But, yeah, this is a group that he brought in, and it was a very defensive, heavy group. 12 out of the 19 guys they signed in the class of 2005 were on defense. And, so eight of those guys are pretty much listed as first teamers on the official depth chart right now. So a lot of those leaders are kind of stepping into that role. Even though they lost a bunch of players, seven guys in the first two rounds, there's still a lot of older leadership on this team. And I think Pete Carroll's excited about that. But you talked about Mark Sanchez and his leadership abilities. And I think we got to see a lot of that this summer and summer workouts. The final two summer workouts we've covered since this last podcast last week on Wednesday. There was a really good workout on Friday where the defense just kind of dominated, and it wasn't a great workout for the offense. And then yesterday on Tuesday, the offense really kind of bounced back, and they ran a lot of 11 on 11 and did well. They mixed in the run and the pass, and then they had a lot of fun towards the end in the very final workout of the summer, throwing the ball around, and a lot of the offensive players kind of played a little defense, and they went at it, and there was a lot of trash talking, Damian Williams and Ronald Johnson and stuff. Just wanted to get your thoughts on the last couple of summer workouts.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, obviously from an offensive standpoint, there are polar opposites. You know, when we got out on the field on Friday, you know, you looked at two players being separated, you know, by other players and coaches, guys getting into it with each other. I mean, it's all stuff. If you want to go on the site, it's in the war room at uscfootball.com. We talk about it in there. You know, you have stuff like that. Not a huge deal, but I mean, it kind of set the tone, I thought, for that day. That was just sort of a chippy day. It was just something where, you know, I mean, you could tell, I think, you know, one of the first routes that Mark Sanchez threw in 11 on 11 was out to one of his backs in the flat, and Kyle Moore had gotten beat, and he grabbed the guy. And he kind of just held him by his shirt, and, you know, the other guys kind of laughing. And Mark, you could just tell he wasn't in the mood for it. And it was something, you know, and I asked him, is it a lack of focus? Is it a lack of concentration? You know, what is it? And he's like, a lot of it just has to do with the fact that this is week nine of their summer program. And these guys are itching to get on the field. You know, linebackers don't want to drop back into coverage. They want to hit. You know, I mean, receivers want to go against DBs, and you know, they want to make plays. They just want to break tackles. You know what I mean? It's all that stuff that I really think just kind of bubbled over into that workout on Friday. A lot of that, I don't want to say, but just sort of restlessness maybe is a better word for it. I think that kind of spawned some stuff.
I think people need to understand about these summer workouts are, most of the time, like this summer, what they're doing is, you know, twice a week they were doing these conditioning workouts at 6:30 in the morning, and it's a full team workout. Other days they'll work out, they split up the squads just depending on everyone's class schedule. But these 6:30 a.m. workouts everyone can make, and it's, you know, mandatory with Coach Carlisle. You got to show up for these, or it's, you know, voluntary with like consequences or whatever they call it. But that's when the full team gets together.
I think it's mandatory surrounded by winks.
Yeah.
I believe is the,
can it really
the official
be?
Wording.
But this is where the whole team can get together. And really the summer, it's kind of the only time they've been able to gather as a team and throw. So they go through this, you know, 45 minute to an hour or whatever conditioning workout where they're just worked to the bone. And I'm sure they'd rather just go back to bed. But because they need to try and keep sharp, they get out there on the field and throw the ball around. They have full team stuff where the linemen get in there. And you're right. I mean, if you're a defensive lineman and you're trying to play the run, you know, out with no pads and no helmets, I mean, you're really not able to do all that much. And I think they do get a little restless, and the players are kind of ready for the structure and the pads and the, you know, practice uniforms that you get when fall camp comes around. But I think they looked at these workouts as like kind of a necessary thing, and a lot of them had a good time with it and fun. And other guys were just kind of like, you know, it's fun, but, and they'll play around, but they didn't really want to take part in as much. And some people had to go to work or go to class. So it didn't, you know, it wasn't a time where you could get everybody there and not everyone was on the same page. But I think Mark Sanchez kind of showed his leadership skills by keeping everyone together and getting everyone to go out there and work and use that time that they had wisely enough, but also let everyone have fun and goof around, you know, because they're kids in college and they're working on their own. No coaches can be there. And I think they, you know, tried to use that time to the best of their abilities.
Yeah, I mean, that was something actually, you know, in a story that I wrote earlier today, you know, talking to Mark Sanchez, I mean, that's something that, you know, he said to me was that, you know, really, it's summer workouts, and there aren't any coaches, there aren't any real consequences to anything. So it was kind of his job to be sort of that middle ground between focus and fun, because, you know, it's like it can't be so disciplined where guys aren't enjoying it, because then you're not going to get the best out of everybody. At the same time, it can't be so loose where they aren't doing the right things, because then no one's going to get any better. So I think, you know, Mark had to kind of walk that line this summer. And I think, I know from what we saw being out there for those throwing sessions, I think he did an admirable job. But I mean, I really think that that's a big part of the reason why, you know, Coach Harrell named him this going into the summer, was because he knew he could handle this. And he knew he could be the guy who kind of said, you know, now's the time to laugh. We'll joke around. Mark would be a guy, you know, sometimes, you know, he might drop back into coverage real quick on a route and play a little corner, or, you know, he might be snapping balls at set and doing stuff like that and having a good time, you know, but at the same time, you know, he's also always making sure guys are really working towards getting better. And I think that's all a coach can really ask for from their starting quarter.
Yeah, we posted some video of that, on Tuesday. You can check it out on USCfootball.com. They have Aaron Korp kind of lined up at corner at first, pulled his shorts up almost to his nipples, I think, and actually made a really nice play on Jordan Cameron, who's like 6'5". He's the transfer. He was originally at BYU, went to JC, and now he's at USC. He's eligible this year.
Played basketball.
And he's a basketball player, and just he can jump. And Korp jumped with him and kind of deflected that ball.
Let's talk about Jordan Cameron, too. I'm not to cut off your story.
You just did, but thanks.
Well, Korp play, right? Korp made the play. That's what
Korp made the play. That wasn't the whole story, though, Dan. We were talking about Mark Sanchez doing the same thing. He kind of lined up there at cornerback. And they really had a lot of fun at the end of those workouts. I was putting my camera away because everything kind of ended, and Mark called over, bring the camera, because he wanted to do some extra one-on-ones. I think it originally was to segue into what you wanted to talk about. They wanted to show some of the skills of Jordan Cameron, and they were really going to do just from like the 10-yard line in, little one-on-one routes, and just, you know, see how everyone would line up. There wasn't any defenders on the field. There were just different offensive players that were going to try to play defense. But I think Mark wanted to show us how good Cameron can be jumping and skying for those balls that he can just, you know, just he gets it at the highest point, just snatches it out of the air.
Yeah, I think he wanted Cameron to go against everybody else on the field. I think that was his plan, was to get everybody else out there to try and stop Jordan Cameron from catching the fade route. Because honestly, he had one catch on Tuesday where, you know, he's kind of had his body kind of contorted and he went off with one hand. And he brought the ball into his other hand and kind of slapped. And it was, I mean, it was a basketball play. It was a rebound. And it's, you know, he's really quick off his feet. He kind of, I don't want to say he's got great hang time or anything like that, but, you know, he stays in the air. He grabs the ball at the highest point. And, you know, I she talked to Mark about this. I mean, there's the feeling is he's got to have at least one red zone touchdown, at least this year. He's going to be such a weapon inside. And he's a guy, I think, as he gets more comfortable with the offense, I mean, you know, you can see that his size, you know, I don't want to say exploited, but I mean, you can use his size in other areas of the field as he gets more comfortable with the playbook. And that's only going to get better, you know, once fall camp rolls around.
Yeah. He definitely can elevate. And he just seems to have a knack for getting that ball at the highest point. And a lot of times people have, they can jump and they have a little hard time timing their jump, but he seems to be able to do that really well. So it'll be fun to watch him. Dan, one thing.
He'll be a tough matchup. He'll be a tough matchup.
Before we go, there's one thing it might be interesting. Veterans of USCfootball.com that were around last summer, we did a lot of video last summer as well as we did this summer. Pretty much every play of summer workouts, I was down there filming it. And one of the common themes was you got to see these receivers and they looked really good. I mean, Osberry, Patrick Turner, I mean, everybody looked good. And, you know, we saw that all summer long. Everyone was making plays, and you could see the speed of Ronald Johnson, and Patrick Turner was catching everything that came his way. And every, you know, guys just down the list, everyone was doing really well. And then obviously when the season came around, it wasn't a position that it just didn't perform it as well as it could have. The production out of the wide receiver position just wasn't there. So I would be curious for you to go back and look at some of those videos, and people that are on USCfootball.com, check them out as well. You can go to the archives and see all that. It's interesting because, you know, I saw last summer how well the receivers looked, how good they looked. And, you know, this summer they looked pretty good again. And we're going to see, you know, once fall camp comes around, are they going to be able to keep that up? Can they, once the pads go on, can they get that separation? And can they make those plays? I think one of the keys, or there's a couple, you know, interesting new people that you talked about. Trayvon Patterson has showed the ability to catch that deep ball. And I think that's something that the defense didn't really respect last year. A lot of defenses didn't. So I think if they can get him or Ronald Johnson to get that deep ball, I think that might open up some space and let some of the other receivers who aren't even the deep threat guys, I think that might open them up a little bit more and give them a few more opportunities to make plays.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at the receivers, I mean, you know, obviously I've heard about the problems from last year and some of the things that went on. I think a couple key differences this season – the addition of Damian Williams is going to pay off big time. I mean, he's smooth on the field. He's confident. He runs really sharp routes, and he's got really good hands. And I mean, he's a guy we watched all summer. I can maybe think of one pass he dropped off the top of my head. Maybe.
Yeah, and like, anything that comes his way, he's usually getting.
Yeah, so I mean, and he's great with his feet along the sideline. He controls his body well. He's going to be a big help. You mentioned Trayvon Patterson. He's healthy. We talk about him going down the field. I really like him in the slot working against big linebackers, actually. You know, Trayvon's not a very big guy, but he's fast. And, I mean, I could see him and Rojo both in the slot doing some damage underneath, getting the ball maybe with that four-yard cushion between them and the linebacker where they maybe make a quick move and all of a sudden, you know, that short little underneath route is a 25-yard gain. I think that's going to be something you're going to see a lot with those two guys in the slot. Obviously, you know, Patrick Turner's a guy who has to step up and has to have a season. He's got to live up to that potential that, you know, he came into college with, you know, one of the top recruited, top-ranked players in the country. I believe top two, maybe? Was he like the number two rated player?
He was up there. He was top five. He might have been number three or something, but definitely the highest rated receiver.
Mean,
yeah, just a five-star guy all
and
the way.
No disrespect intended to Patrick Turner, but he hasn't produced to that level yet. And I think he knows that. I think he'd admit it. And I think, you know, people who followed the team, you know, definitely know that. And he's a guy who has to step up, and he has to be that kind of veteran force. But the thing that I like a lot about these receivers is I feel like they really complement each other well. You've got that kind of, you know, Damian Williams is a guy who will go over the middle, and he'll do just a little bit of everything. You've got the guy who's got swagger in Vidal Hazelton. I mean, more swagger than probably anybody actually needs. You know, more than enough swagger.
Swagger to spare.
What?
He's got swagger to spare.
Yes, he does. And then you got Patrick Turner, who, you know, runs really, really sharp routes. And if he can be that guy, too, with great size, who can be kind of that possession guy. Then you've got, you know, you mentioned Trayvon and Rojo are your burners. And then you add a guy like Bryce Butler in the mix. He's got these freakish long arms, really soft hands, made some great catches throughout camp. And also runs unbelievable routes for a freshman. And then you add a guy with the versatility of, you know, DJ Shoemate. It's a group that I think they all kind of mesh well together. Those are the guys that I see. I mean, and there are other guys we're not even talking about in that group. You know, Brandon Carswell is a guy that, you know, who could break out. There's a lot of talent there.
There is. They're going to have to find the right rotation, the right mix, and see who gets on the field. And should be interesting, but we'll be covering all of that in fall camp. Players report on August 5th. First practice starts August 6th. There'll be two-a-days for the first 4 days where they split up the veterans and the newcomers, and we'll be down there covering all that. You can read all of our reports on uscfootball.com. But, Dan, that's all the time we have for this segment. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Stay tuned for our final segment. We're going to talk to Jason Shear from GoAZCats.com and preview the Arizona Wildcats.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast.
Trojan fans, have legal problems or questions only an attorney can answer? Contact the law offices of Bart Ring. Bart is a proud Trojan alum who has been taking care of the legal needs of the USC family, its alumni and fans, for over 20 years. Like the Trojans under Pete Carroll, Bart and his team achieve successful results for their clients by preparation and outworking the opposition. Call Bart at 818-587-9299 or go to bartringlaw.com to see if he can help you with your legal issues. Don't forget to mention the Peristyle Podcast for a free consultation.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
All right, welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. It's our third and final segment, and we have a special guest in this segment to talk about the Arizona Wildcats. We have Jason Shear from GoAZCats.com. He's part of the Rivals.com network. Jason, thanks very much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, so I just want to talk about the Wildcats. I was down at the Pac-10 Media Day on Thursday, and Coach Stoops was there. He brought Willie Tuitama, one of the most exciting players in the Pac-10, if not the country. It looks like Tuitama has a really good shot at becoming the career passing leader in Arizona history this year. What are the expectations of the senior quarterback?
I think the expectations are quite big for him. It's been pretty tumultuous with him. One game he'll be very good, and the next game he'll be the subject of the ire of Arizona fans. With the new offense Sonny Dykes is running, he showed some potential last season, had probably the best season he's had since coming here. So senior quarterback leading a pretty experienced offense and one that's explosive, and the expectations are quite high.
All right, last year the team finished 5-7. This year a lot of people are kind of picking them in the middle of the pack. Phil Still, I think, had him up at number 5, kind of just on that outer, you know, the outer edge of what some of the top teams like the USC's, Oregon's, Arizona State's. What do you think, what can Arizona do to jump into that upper echelon of the Pac-10 this year? Do they have a shot of doing that?
Well, what's good is for the first time in a long time, the schedule's pretty easy to open up with. So right away they should, Idaho, Toledo, and New Mexico, they should have 3 wins. And the biggest problem with them is early in the season, they've had games like at LSU where they get absolutely blown out and their confidence is shattered for the rest of the season. But Stoops tends to turn it around towards the end of the season, and once he starts winning a little bit, the team gets confidence and does better. So I think in order to finish higher up in the conference, those first 3 games are pretty pivotal. If they're able to come out of their 3-0 with a high confidence level, they should be in pretty good shape, and they could have a chance to surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, I guess you get a little momentum early in the season. Of all the Pac-10 schools, most every Pac-10 school has at least one huge marquee out-of-conference matchup on the schedule this year. They've got some big names coming to Pac-10 stadiums and some away games. From Penn State to Ohio State to Georgia. So I guess it's a good chance for the Wildcats to kind of get some momentum, and then they take on, they have to play in Pasadena at UCLA. On offense, a lot of starters returning, 10 returning starters, and obviously Tuitama is a great, great, great player. What do you think what they did in the spring on offense did, and do you think they can carry that momentum into the season?
In the spring, they looked pretty good. I think it's interesting because the biggest asset to the offense, and they probably didn't even participate in the spring, Matt Scott, he's an incoming freshman quarterback. He's going to get some playing time, and they might institute something kind of like what Florida did. Back when Tebow was a little younger, where they put in Matt Scott for a running package or two, and then they have Tuitama, and they kind of mix it up. So the biggest asset to offense might not even be there. But in spring, you can just tell they're going to give tight end Rob Gronkowski a lot more touches.
they're hoping to get a more consistent running game. They still, you know, it's played Arizona for years. They've had absolutely no running game. And, you know, they might not get one with this type of offense, but in terms of they have Mike Thomas returning, the receivers are a year older. So the offense, there's no reason why it shouldn't improve.
All right, and then on defense, only three returning starters, but I think that's a little misleading. There is a lot of experience coming back on defense. And I think Arizona's only lost, I think they only lost 17 total scholarship players, like the fewest in the Pac-10. So there is some experience there on defense, even though, you know, eight of the starters are gone.
Yeah, defense, there is some experience. I think the biggest concern is who they lost. They lost Antoine Kaysen and Will-Ray Fontenot. So they're going to have to come in with two cornerbacks, but even the two guys playing corner, one's going to be JC. He'll get some playing time in Marquise Humley. Devin Ross has played there quite a bit. He's probably familiar with USC fans and just around the pack in general. And incoming freshman Robert Golden. And then at linebacker, they have, you know, Ronnie Palmer. He's got plenty of experience. And defensive line, they have the young guys. But a lot of complaints with Arizona fans is a lot of them felt the veterans actually weren't doing their job. So no one, you know, there's some upset people with the experience level, but a lot of them are excited because the young guys, when they got playing time last season, showed a really good motor and actually probably played the best on the entire defense.
Yeah, so sometimes you can have a little bit of addition by subtraction. I think Kaysen was a complete stud, and I think he's gonna have a really good NFL career. But some of the other guys, yeah, I mean, sometimes a returning starter isn't always good if the player wasn't that good. You get a younger guy some experience, and they can make some big, you know, become a playmaker on the defense.
Correct, and I mean, you know, you have a guy like Lewis Holmes where every season the expectations were high, and you know, you had to play him because of those expectations. And at the end of the season, all you were talking about is how he didn't meet them. You know, that's going to be the case of addition by subtraction. I mean, no one's really upset. You're going to have Ricky Elmore step in at defensive end. You're going to get Tuihalamaka coming in. He's a great linebacker / defensive end. And you're going to have the young guys who are just ready to play. They've been waiting for their time, and this is it.
All right. Well, October 25th at Arizona in Tucson, USC comes to town. Last year, I don't know if Trojan fans remember, Arizona was actually leading that game going into the fourth quarter. It was a very close contest. You know, U of A has had some trouble against USC in the past. It's not really a game that you're going to look forward to with, you know, it's the eighth or ninth game on the schedule. But it was, you know, coming home, getting a little momentum, knowing that they played the Trojans straight up for most of that game last year. Do you think that gives the Wildcats a little confidence?
Yeah, I mean, they had a very good game against the Trojans last year, and they should get a little more confidence. And, you know, I'm sure the coaches will use that. It seems that Arizona, the biggest problem with them is that they just, for some reason, haven't learned how to win. They haven't learned how to make those plays in the fourth quarter. And if that team has confidence and they're doing well, you know, throughout the season going into the USC game, there's a good chance that they might have that confidence. And, you know, anything can happen, especially at Arizona Stadium game like that. It usually fills up, and the atmosphere is usually pretty fun. So I suppose anything can happen, but obviously USC is still a pretty big favorite.
All right, then one last one. It's kind of like a contract year for Mike Stoops. You got to see if he comes out and does well. What are your predictions for how they're going to finish, you know, in the Pac-10, knowing that Stoops pretty much is going to be playing for his job this year?
Well, it's always tough to predict Arizona, but I personally can't see any way they don't make a bowl game. You know, obviously there's injuries and stuff like that, but with the opening three games being how they are, and the Pac-10, in my opinion, is a little down this season. I think Arizona's got a good shot to make a bowl game, and if they make a bowl game, Stoops is fine. You know, Arizona fans and the alumni and the administration get what they want, and that's just for Arizona, you know, for starters, just to be back on somewhat of a national scale and making it to bowl games.
All right. Well, Jason Scheer, check out his work on GoAZCats.com. Thanks very much for your time today.
I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening to another week of the Peristyle Podcast. We'll be back next week talking Trojan football, so stay tuned.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can now download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player. Just search for Peristyle Podcast the next time you log into iTunes.